Good evening. Welcome to the October 7th board meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District. I first want to report out of the closed session that we had a discussion about our labor negotiations. And that's the sum total of that. Do we have a consensus on the order of business? I'm looking around and I see that we do. There's no objections. All right. I'm looking for an approval of the minutes from September the 16th. Mr. Buckman moves approval. And second by Mr. Millar. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion covers 7-0. Passes 7-0. Okay. Oh. Passes 6-0 with one abstention. All right. We have with us tonight, and we're very fortunate to have student representatives from both San Luis Obispo High School and Pacific Beach. So from San Luis, we have John O. Roberts and Shelby Thomas. And from Pacific Beach, Shayla Sheik. So who would like to go first?
I'm teaching at PB. Mrs. Naren has come to us from the County Office of Education, where she has been teaching in an alternative ed for 14 years. Before that, she did her student teaching at SLO High and taught there for 1 year. Before she was laid off during budget cuts, it's great to have her back in San Luis Coastal. Special thanks to Mr. Jim Campbell, who subbed for us for 6 weeks to start off the school year. As the school year ramps up this fall, students in the City Farm class with Mrs. Wilder and Ms. Jacobson have lettuce, tomatoes, corn, sunflowers, and more growing in their organic plant plots. Garden plots? These crops were planted during the three-week pilot program this summer for the City Farm School. The farm class combines classroom curriculum developed by our very own Ms. Wilder with hands-on outdoor learning in the City Farm. Students can earn academic credit while studying such topics as international versus local supply chains, the history of food, the physics, chemistry, and biology of agroecology, and the principles of sustainable and organic agriculture. The program is supported through grants from Henry Mayo Newhall Foundation, United Way of San Luis Obispo County, and Janssen Youth and Youth Sports Fund. Our latest skateboard design and building class is now underway, with Mr. DeFirmian leading the students through the design, laminating, shaping, and final artwork on their very own boards. Fourth marking period, Mr. DeFirmian will be teaching a class in remote-controlled underwater vehicles. We were planning to use the vehicles to help clean up Laguna Lake, but now the search is on for an actual body of water. The skate class is funded, cleans and repairs them, and takes to the third world countries to give others the gift of sight. After PB students cleaned over 4,000 pairs of eyeglasses, the director of eye care, Dr. Klaus Schumann, made a donation to PB used for scholarships for the graduating senior who completes the most community service. As always, you are welcome to PB, and we hope to see you at school for our back-to-school night barbecue next week, Wednesday, October 15th, from 5 to 7 p.m. That's it.
Thank you, Mrs. Seek. That was Miss Seek, I'm sorry. Thank you. That was very good. Jono, are you ready? Jono and Shelby?
Yeah.
Okay. The microphone back to you.
Hi, everybody. I'm Jono Roberts, ASB President of San Luis Obispo High School. So what we've been working on for the past couple of weeks, and we take a lot of pride in, is that we constructed our own ASB website. It was a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, minus the blood and minus the sweat. Maybe the tears were just on my part, you know. But here it is. You can find it by clicking on the ASB tab of the SLO High website. Can I stand up to point stuff out? Is it?
Absolutely.
You can go up to the podium.
You can speak from right here if you'd like, or...
Okay.
So Shayla, could you...
ASB t-shirts. And so here's our homepage. This is the first place you'll be go to. Here you can search anything on the site that you might find that you need to look up, say a homecoming dance tickets or something like that. Here we have a quick link to a fall sports rally slideshow. Can you click the little play thing? Yeah, so that'll go through a bunch of pictures. We had a around the world in 80 days themed rally. It was really cool. We all had a lot of fun, and here's a little description on it if you want to look later. Here we have our Twitter incorporation. This is a really new establishment, and by new I mean we created the account today. But what it is we have a Slow High ASB account, and we can tweet out and say, hey, we have a really good game that's going to go on today, you know, AG versus Slow High, be there, be square. And, you know, everybody shows up because nobody's square. And if that wasn't cool enough, along with the pictures and everything, we can find how students are reacting on campus, and they say, oh, I can't wait for the next Tiger Friday. Or here we have Shelby, who tweeted, big cross-town rivalry volleyball game this Thursday against Mission Prep. Let's get the jungle out there. And here we have a picture. And so we can show students that we find them and we pick them and pull them out. And if you want to, can you scroll down a little bit? Thank you. So here we have myself with a lot of beginning tweets. Can't wait for another Spirit Friday. And here we have the new Tiger sweatshirts are in. So you can go in and look at all that. And it's really cool and we're super excited. If you click on the events or here, maybe I'll save that for later. Here we have our class competition points. So here is the Welcome Back Rally, and here's the Fall Rally, and here you can see the different classes. And so within the games that we hold during the rallies, each class competes for points. So in Nightcrawlers, say, which was where a student would get into a sleeping bag and try to crawl their way to the other side, while their other student would be helping them, and then they'd switch with the bag and helping. And so the freshmen came in first on that one, all to our surprise. And so at the bottom, you can see the total of the scores. Now, the class with the most points at the end of the year gets $1,000 from the ASB, and that can go to a dance, say, if you wanted to do, you know, a cool little hat party or something, if you wanted to give something out to your class with that money. That's available for the class officers to decide. And if you could go back up, we can go down to the ASB projects. Oh, or I mean up. Say that. So on this sub tab right here, ASB projects. Here are all the officers that you can contact if you want to decorate your float. And we have this cool thing called Google Forms. I don't know if any of you guys are familiar with it. But in order to update the bios for all of our students or in ASB, they'd go on here and they'd say, okay, my name is Jonna Roberts. I am the ASB president. My email is Jonna Edward Ray. Here's my club. Here's a PDF of our meeting minutes. Here's our advisor. Or we could also do, what would be your favorite theme that you'd want to see for homecoming? Obviously, it's too late to decide that, but we could have a lot of student input if we do this, and we're really excited about the opportunities. So back up to the tabs. We have a photo gallery. And so with all of these, we have just some sampling of some of the events that go on. Sometimes it takes a little while to load, but we have the Welcome Back Rally, we have the Fall Sports Rally, we have our Club Rush, which is where all the clubs come on campus at lunch and have a table and advertise themselves. We had an Oreo lunchtime activity, and we have pictures of the staff doing ice bucket challenges. And one of the cool things is if you click on the picture down there, can you see that? You can click on the Club Rush 2014. And it brings you to the page. And this is where we feel that students are going to want to come to the page the most, because everybody likes seeing pictures of themselves. hopefully, you know, if you like me right there, giving the little thumbs up, you're saying, I want to go to this website so I can get a picture of myself so I can look good on all the social media so I can have a nice new picture of me as my profile picture. And I think we've had around at least 1,000 views on our page, not just the Club Rush, but we've had, it just counts one view, it doesn't count 1,000 people, so potentially someone could have come 1,000 times and wanted to download a picture, but I hope that's not the case. And if you go back, we have looked at it, and I was like, really, 13 days of homecoming? And, the other day wasn't 13 days, but you know how it is. Here we have a link that you can click on, any students willing to ask questions to the ASB. We have a little forum group where they can come in and say, hi, I'm wondering if my friend can come to the homecoming dance. Is there any slips that I need them to sign? You can say, you know, oh, well, this year we're not offering that, but possibly next year, so stay in touch. And you can answer all the questions that they have. Or what's good is that another student could, who would get to it before us, and we would approve it, of course. They don't get to post anything that they want without our approval, but they could say, oh, well, I actually know that we don't have any permission slips this year. We're not offering students from other schools to come. So we hope that a lot of students will come to here and ask their questions as opposed to wandering aimlessly around the quad saying, why can't I do this? What's going on? Which I know before I joined ASP was how most of the things happened in my head, maybe. So if we go back, here we have links to our Facebook account. It's a Facebook page. So it's the San Luis Obispo High School ASB. And here we have, so 345 people have liked this, so they get updates about what's going on campus, pictures, all that stuff. And what I like most about this is that out of those 345, we have students, but we also have alumni who found it. So alumni can see, oh, there's a, you know, big football game. Let's go out and watch it. And I know they're really excited about that. So, woo. So if we go back, we also have a link to our Instagram account, which is more in touch with the young audience, as we do not find a lot of alumni on here. But most people are frequent in checking Instagram rather than Facebook on their phones. So when you post a picture that we have, we're excited about that. Now if we go back, we just have a couple more things we've added.
Hey, Jono?
Yeah.
Before you bring this to closure, though, maybe you could do a selfie and post that up on Instagram with all of us. What do you think?
Oh, yeah, I would love to.
So why don't you,
do you want me
we'll
to
pull
do
this to closure? We'll do that. I saw that, so...
Do you want
to be the first to say it, though?
So, here. Okay. So. Let me just put. And. We can actually look that up right now. So I'll go on Twitter. I'll post it to Instagram later. That'll take a little longer to come up with a witty caption. But I'll say ASB President John O. Roberts. Oh, I don't want to capitalize my name. Rocks the selfie with the school board. Hashtag suit selfie with Dr. Prater. And then we do that. And now if we go to the home selfies with the school board, and I think that's a valid excuse. So just to... I think I might have to do that from now on. I mean, even just for my own personal pleasure. I'm a selfie fiend. I love taking them. So we only have a couple more things left, I think. So if we could scroll on up. We have, the last thing is the ASB team. So here we have pictures, bios, emails, and names of all of the representatives. So we start off with the ASB, and then we go down to the senior class officers, and then we go to the juniors and the sophomores, and it goes all the way down to the bottom of the commissioners, and then our interns. Everybody was very happy to take their pictures. And then here we have all our interns at the bottom. Uh-oh. And then our last picture should be of Mr. Jim Johnson in his yellow shirt, black and yellow tie, you know, really excited that something's going on in class. So that's all we have for right now. We have a bunch loaded up for the future. We're really excited about this website. We even got in the background, you know. I actually took that picture from right there. So we're super excited. You can access it from the ASB tab on the SLOHS website. I'd recommend you bookmark it. That's just a personal thing. You know. I'd love to see it bookmarked, but I'm not going to peer pressure you into anything. That's all I have to say.
No, you don't know yet. I thank you, John. That was extremely entertaining and edifying.
Mr. President.
Thank you. Mr. Buckman.
I just wanted to offer my fish pond. I haven't seen the bottom of it, so if you guys want to come use the underwater, I would appreciate it. Thanks.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Buckman. Thank you for coming this evening. I was hoping Shelby would contribute something, but she's here and it's moral support. Right. Okay. Okay. Great. And Shayla, as usual, you're welcome to stay for the entire meeting, or if you might have stats homework or something like that, you're free to leave.
I do have an excuse, so I could stay, but I might as well do the homework.
All right. Okay. Thank you
very
much.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. So we are at correspondence, and we did have some correspondence from Mr. Jim Skoulis, and I see him moving around the room. I don't know. That's Andy Marinello. I'm sorry. I don't know where my head is at, Andy. Sorry. I have Jim Skoulis on the brain. His letter was a letter that struck a right balance between nostalgia and gratitude, and I think ecstasy, perhaps, for his many years of service to the district. And we are now at public comment. Is there anyone who has filed for public comment or wishes to make public comment?
As a fundraiser for our club, and so we were just wondering if you would like to be a part of that as a team.
Yes, you're putting us on the spot, but I don't want to commit anybody yet, but could you introduce everybody and...
Yes.
And then we'll mull it over while you're doing that.
This is Emily. She is our vice president. And this is Sherry, and she's our reporter.
And who's your advisor?
Miss Lisa Washman.
Wonderful. Great. I don't know. Are there some administrators down at that end that may form a team of some such?
Yeah, so we have been talking about it. If you look at our bronze award from last year in the right light, it kind of looks gold to me.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, we're going to go back and make sure we get it right this time. But yeah, I certainly wouldn't mind collecting candidates from the board and to let you know who is willing to participate, if that would be okay.
How about our administrative assistants? Are they throwing their head?
Unfortunately, our ringer, Val Harrigan, is unavailable on the date of the event. But Mandy and I are going to champion ourselves again, and we have a new ringer to plug into the mix.
We have some details about when it is and
Yes, it is November 1st down in the nutrition lab at San Luis Obispo High School. And it starts at 11, 4?
Four. Mr. Buckman, you had a question? Dr. Eisengrath Rogers, you did, and then...
Well, I heard the date. Boy, that's soon, girls. We have to put our team together here. But it sounds like a throwdown with these guys, so we might have to step up. Let us talk, okay? We'll figure it out. But thank you for that invitation.
We will field a team or two for sure.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you for coming. Thank you very much. All right. That concludes the public comment, and so now we're ready for some superintendent's updates. Let's start with business and budget update.
Yeah, Dr. Prater and myself went to the SF Squared regional meeting this week, and it was interesting to kind of hear from our other community-funded school districts in our regional area, as well as from school services and their representatives. Some of the key points that came out of our discussions were Prop 2, which is the proposition upcoming, of course, that has the reserve cap language built into it. And so they discussed that a little bit. Right now, that proposition looks like it's not polling well, but they had it down. Mr. Unger looked at me like, what? So it was polling. What they said was 41%, I think, is yes.
But there's also, I don't know, this was as of last week, it was beating the nose, and there were a bunch of undecideds, 20% undecided.
That same type of pitch for the proposition. It's something he really wants to get accomplished prior to the election. So Prop 2 is the rainy day fund. That's the main aspect of it, is the rainy day fund to for the overall state budget. But with that was the caveat that they put in the cap reserves. And so... that is something that could be legislated out afterwards, potentially, even if the Proposition 2 passes. So we'll see. It's just one of the issues that they're going to be following and kind of tracing for us. Talked a little bit about facility funding as well. No state bond this time, of course, for the November ballot. Water bond was something that he was focused on, the governor was, and not facilities at this time. So they suspect that in the next few years that there'll probably be some legislation about school facilities and how that, you know, if anything, the governor seems set on reducing state liability for anything. So putting that liability on local voters, much like going out for local bond resolutions and things, even with potential state facility bonds in the future. So it's going to be, again, an issue for us to watch, to work with school services, with CSBA and groups in terms of watching that legislation as it comes forward. So we'll see how that goes. The last kind of key issue that they talked about in terms of long-term issue is the minimum state aid, which is our former categorical funds, basically, that we continue to get even with the LCFF. As I've talked about before, there's a bit of a discrepancy between Department of Finance and Department of Education on whether that minimum state aid ends should the LCF types of things. They really stressed to us to continue our contacting legislatures, contacting, you know, people in government so that they know from, they just felt like it's more powerful when the board, when the superintendent contacts our local, you know, representatives. And that's something for us to continue to do, to seek out. So that was those are kind of the key points that they went over. There were some other things that were kind of basic that we've gone over lots of times before, but those were some of the highlights at the meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Pinkerton. Is there anyone from the board who wishes to ask a question, make a comment? Mr. Unger.
Yeah, I was just thinking perhaps we could consider asking the superintendent to set up a meeting with Senator Monning, because I know that Assemblyman Asajian has supported repeal of the budget cap, but perhaps we as a board could ask for a meeting with him and talk to him about that, either before or after the election, and let him know our feelings and the concerns, if we have concerns about that.
Mr. Prater, Dr. Prater.
Yeah, Mr. Pinkerton and I attended the conference, they made it very clear that even if you can't speak directly to the assemblyman or the senator or the congressman, they recommended even setting up a meeting with staffers, that the staff people are the ones putting together I'd be happy to do that.
Well, yeah, I think I see a thumbs up, a couple of thumbs ups.
Okay.
So you have at least
I will do that.
Three, four, five. I'm assuming, Mr. Unger, that your thumb is up and you're ready to go. Okay. Yes.
Did I understand you correctly in saying that Cacho has already come out supporting abandoning that trailer bill?
Yes. I actually spoke to his legislative assistant at the Classified Employee of the Year dinner and shared my concerns with him. And he said that Cacho believes that that school districts should be allowed to carry appropriate levels of reserves. And he supported the bill from, I can't remember who she was, from Modesto, who put a bill forward to repeal it, and it was roundly defeated in the assembly, at least. So I believe, you know, it would be good probably to share with Cacho our feelings, too. I think Senator Monning, because he's in the majority, would be better for us to share with him our feelings, if not both.
Okay, thanks, Chris.
Yeah, and, you know, again, I mentioned to the staffer that I would like to talk to him. I think, you know, I'm willing to talk to him myself, but I think if we can all just share our concerns, it would be really great.
Thank you, Mr. Unger. I think you have support here. All right. We are now at...
Last night, we had close to 50 parents in attendance at Baywood Elementary School for the first of two parent workshops on our new grading system. Thanks to Mr. Buckman for your attendance. Appreciate your being there. Each of the parents was provided a sample report card as well as a copy of the standards-based grading handbook, which you have now in front of you. Our assessment TOSA, Darla Batistic, did a wonderful job walking parents through the rationale for the shift in our grading, the research behind the work, a detailed explanation of what is going to be different in our new grading system, and ideas for how that they can support their children at home. The parent ed workshops are one in a series of steps in our ongoing parent education plan. You remember back in September, at all of our back-to-school nights, the principals shared information as well as led parents to our now district website that has information on the report card. That includes the handbook, grade-level brochures, the actual report card templates, as well as a six-minute webinar. Our teachers have also been very busy preparing for the shift to standards-based grading. It has been truly a collaborative effort, both at and between sites, in helping teachers develop a deep understanding of the standards at their grade level, and then looking at multiple ways to assess student progress at the end of the first trimester. Teachers are meeting in grade-level teams with their instructional coach, reviewing the grading report card handbook to better understand grading criteria and benchmarks. Our teachers are to be commended for this thoughtful work that they're putting in right now to really make sure that they are able to fairly assess student progress, provide standards planning forms, as well as a supplemental grading form to be used by IEP managers along with general education teachers to make sure that all students are being graded on a rigorous set of obtainable standards. In early November, teachers will participate in a quick demonstration of how to use our Illuminate system to enter grades in on our electronic report card. That Illuminate system will save teachers hours of time that was previously spent filling out individual report cards and comments. I believe this shift to grading students based on where they are along a continuum of skills will better support teachers in planning for next steps in instruction. I think the same is going to happen for our students when they're provided with this ongoing feedback loop on their performance in each subject, leading to marks at the end of the trimester that represent their academic achievement in relation to the standards. An incidental outcome of our shift to the new grading system has been that our teachers are really developing a deeper understanding of Common Core. They're learning how to shift their instruction to meet that rigor that's required of Common Core, as well as to assess student performance in order to support learning. We'll be asking for feedback both from our teachers and our parents along the way so that we can make adjustments and improvements to make sure that by the end we've developed the very best tool to assess student learning for our students and for their families. Do you have any questions?
Mrs. Sheffer.
When is the first grading period? When is conference week the first time?
It is the third week in November, okay. And I don't have the exact date.
Oh, right.
Yes, it's third week. It's the week and the week before Thanksgiving. But after the first trimester as well as the second trimester with teachers, with parents we're going to wait until after the second trimester, give them a little bit more time to really get familiar and understand and go through the whole cycle of at the end of the first trimester when they attend the report card conference, they'll be setting goals, the teacher and parent and child. So we want to go through that whole cycle to really so our parents have that complete understanding of what the changes are.
Okay. I'd be interested in maybe either here or Friday notes or somehow having a little report about how all that went, both for the regular classroom teacher and the special ed teachers in terms of how much time it took, how it compares to what they've done in the past, and how they felt the parent response was.
Mm-hmm. You got it.
Thank you.
Let's go with Mr. Unger and then Mr. Millar and then Mr. Buckman.
Well, and I just wanted to say, I took a look at the fifth grade report card today. It is really an amazing document. And I felt just looking through it that it was so thorough and so in-depth. And given the time, I really think it will help people understand what their child's achievement is. I was thrilled to see it. The one thing that I'm kind of worried about is typically we run our conferences a half an hour per thing, and I could see there's so much information here that it could take a lot longer than a half an hour for parents and teachers to really get through it and explain what it means.
New report card, and they haven't seen it or heard it. So that's really our goal, that they will be well-versed in it by the time they get there.
Do you know if at Baywood we got any Morro Bay parents?
Yes,
there.
We had equal share from all three schools.
Okay.
But I can tell you all three principals were there as well from the coast schools, and I spoke directly with the principal at Del Mar, right, who said she was there not only to support parents for being there, but to think about how she was going to take back a mini version of that to her school site, either through a PTA meeting or an ELAC meeting.
Perfect. And then the last question I have is, does this help support the data that we need to gather for our LCAP? To demonstrate progress on our LCAP?
We did not write grades as a measurement in our current LCAP, I think is the short answer to that, but student achievement.
Yeah, because this is to me, this is more than grades.
Oh, absolutely.
This is a whole lot more, and it's really putting words to kids' achievement in a way that hopefully a teacher in fifth grade at Del Mar and a teacher at fifth grade at Sensheimer are using the same language the same standards to compare students. It's pretty amazing work you guys did.
I think that's a very good point. Thank you.
Mr. Millar.
In going through this, the first thing that struck me is I began getting really nervous about having been able to complete the fifth grade mathematics expectations. So thank heavens all that's far behind me. Is this handbook available in Spanish?
Yes.
Are we?
I think I shared this earlier this year that we also sought feedback from our ELACs as well as our PTAs in that final development stage. Brochures went out at Back to School Night, where we certainly have our best attendance of the year, that were grade level brochures that were in both English and Spanish. Good. And there's a webinar that's 6 minutes long that's both in English and Spanish. So we really are trying to reach out to everybody.
Good. There's a lot of information in here, but I suspect most of the parents are going to come in once they understand what we're trying to achieve and focus on the grade level stuff, expectations and core for their kids.
It was interesting last night. I had a couple parents come up to me afterwards and were just chatting about their new understanding and appreciating the shift. I think once you can get over that, but I think I know what an A is, and I knew how to pay my child for A's, what am I going to do with this? Once you can kind of get over that loss of that, I thought the parents last night were very receptive to the idea and the thinking and the hope that I'm going to have a really good understanding of my child's strengths at his or her particular grade level, as well as teaching and learning and support I can do at home to support that child.
And I was really struck by the positive perspective on learning behaviors.
Yeah.
You know, it's no more of the O and the minus and all this. So I'm really impressed with it. I think it's going to disrupt our statistics for a while, but so is Common Core and the math progression, all those things. But I think it's going to be a richer experience for both parents and students.
And
I think it looks great.
Thank you, Mr. Millar. Mr. Buckman.
Thank you, sir. It's good to see you again.
You too.
Hotline. I don't know if you've thought of this or not, but I mean, do you think that we might possibly need to have a little extra support those few days after?
Well, I would say, for me, the report card hotline is first of all the classroom teacher, and then after that, it's the elementary principal, with me right behind. And I will tell you that with teachers right now, our office and in particular, Darla Batistic is answering those. And, you know, we're holding hands with our teachers right now and in the very best sense of the word, because it is different and it is more difficult and it takes a lot of thinking and working together to get this right. So our hotline hours are definitely open.
24 hours. Mrs. Sheffer, and then Dr. Eisenrath Rogers.
I just wanted to express apologies for not following board protocol when asking for a follow-up report. I need consensus on that before I suggest anyone go to work. Okay. Is that all right with everyone? Okay. Thank you.
Dr. Eisenrath Rogers.
Thank you, Mrs. Shields. And so when you mentioned earlier that in answer to Mr. Unger's question of how are we going to contain the length of these first conferences. So you mentioned that you're hopeful that the teachers will be communicating with the parents in advance. What would that look like? How would parents be reaching out to the parents? How would teachers be reaching out to parents in advance of the conference to sort of give them a heads up about what you might be talking about?
Well, it's that absolutely started at Back to School Night. And in our Back to School Night presentations, our team card that night, they talked about the shift from the letters to the numbers, to the behaviors. A lot was already said. If you look at some of our, I can't say all, but some of our school newsletters, as well are, you know, putting information out to just keep parents in that loop, to keep thinking about it, sending them towards the website. So where you can really, I'm telling you, in 6 minutes in that webinar, you can get a pretty darn good understanding of what the shifts are, how it's different, what the goal setting part is. You get a pretty good first synapse if you aren't able to attend one of the workshops.
Actually, what I'm thinking of is the anxiety that new parents especially have when they come to that first teacher conference. And how do you get a sense of, is my child in the middle? Is my child kind of getting along okay? Is my child having difficulty?
Well, I think they're going to have a much more specific understanding of where their child is than if their child's getting a B in reading. A B in reading, as we know, may be a combination of a result of tests, a result of turning in homework, a result of behaving during reading time, a result of cooperating well in their reading group, as well as getting extra bonus points for turning things in extra, and on and on and on and on. when we assess kids and when the teacher sits down with that parent at that conference, let's say it was a fifth grader, it's going to be about how that child at that point in time, middle of November, is measuring up to our expectation of those fifth grade standards in reading for mid-November.
And this child is trying to get to, compared to other children, it's compared to that child's individual progress.
Absolutely.
Which is
absolutely
wonderful.
In relation to state standards.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Unger.
Could you send either me or the rest of the board, either as soon as you can or on the Friday packet, the link to the video on the report cards? I'd sure like to see that.
I would be happy to.
Thank you.
Of course.
Any other questions or comments? Thank you, Mrs. Shields. I will open it to public comment if there are any questions or comments from the public. Okay, seeing none. We will move on to a public hearing on the determination of sufficient textbooks and instructional materials.
Hello.
You're back.
I'm back. As you are aware, Ed Code requires each year that the governing board determine that each student has sufficient textbooks that are aligned to content standards in the subject of English language arts, including ELD, mathematics, science, and history, social science, as well as foreign language and health for students enrolled in those classes. The board item tonight describes where we are short textbooks and the books that we have ordered to deal with that shortage. And tonight is a public hearing only. We'll come back at the next meeting to request approval.
I have a question about the item.
Mr. Millar.
Amy, on page one at the bottom, we've ordered the following textbooks, and I can see how that will address the inadequacies, but it's 2 months down the road. What are we doing for those kids to have textbooks and materials in their hands right now?
Like if delivered by then.
We're all not of them have been.
No. They've all been ordered, all have been delivered, but one little set of fifth grade books.
Oh, excellent. Okay. Thank you.
Well, that was sort of my question is the ones that we identify as a wear or a loss, those were identified at the end of the last school semester or.
To some degree. We verify it in September.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Is there any further questions? Okay. Is there any public comment? Okay. It is a hearing, right? What's your question, Mr. Millar? I didn't quite understand. Well, yeah. Okay. It's open to a public hearing. Thank you. Is there anyone in the public that wishes to address the board on this issue, on this item? Okay, seeing none. We will move on. Oh, Mrs. Roger.
Thank you. I'm sorry. I don't want to belabor anything here. But when this next comes back to us, it will be after the fact. It's already after the fact, and I know that we need to purchase these materials, but it's noted that the fiscal impact is substantial. Will we at some point in the near future know the cost of these materials?
Absolutely. We can
Friday,
give you the
Friday
cost.
Packet's great for that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Roger. And thank you, Mrs. Shields. We are now at the item 7.
Teacher and district literacy coach to share with you an overview of San Luis Coastal's Reading Recovery Program that will include our goals and expected outcomes for students. We will share how Reading Recovery ties to our LCAP plan as well as the performance data on students from these specific groups. The data will provide information on how students perform not only by the end of first grade, but also longitudinally through third grade. Some of the data gets gnarly, is that the professional word I want to use? gets somewhat complex, and nobody can better explain it than Mary. So just hang with her, and she's going to make this super comprehensible for you. Okay.
Ooh, the pressure's on. Hi. Thank you for the opportunity to share something with you that's so near and dear to my heart. Helping young children enter the world of literacy. I'd like to introduce you to my friend Ethan up here. He's one of the students I'm currently working with at Monarch Grove. each day we work together, he shows me the new connections he's making in reading and writing. My challenge is finding ways to connect his love of football to his growing appreciation for reading and writing. We've decided I'm his literacy coach, and just like football, you have to practice. He is going to learn how to read and write with the help of football. So what is reading recovery? It's a short-term, one-on-one intervention for first graders having extreme difficulty with early reading and writing. Approximately 30% of our first-grade students are administered 6 standardized assessments each fall to identify those students with the greatest literacy needs. All first graders are considered for the intervention if they're the lowest performing in the grade. We can change the literacy lives of our students in as little as 24 hours of instruction. This is a picture of Russ Rayborn, one of our new teachers in training, with his student, Loxy. The goal of reading recovery is that our students will expand their power to learn from their own efforts and solve problems as they read and write. Evidence that a child has a self-extending system in place is their ability to read and write increasingly more complex messages. They learn to use their resources to solve new words. They monitor and edit their work, and they know when and how to get help. They become problem solvers who know how to learn without that continued one-on-one support. Reading recovery is research-based. Each year, our reading recovery teachers submit data for every student served, even if they only have one lesson. And that data is submitted. It's housed at Ohio State. This is the data that was submitted to the What Works Clearinghouse for review. Of the 153 beginning reading programs reviewed, only reading recovery was found to have positive effects across all 4 literacy domains, and only reading recovery received the highest possible rating for general reading achievement. This is my friend Andrea, another student I'm working with at Monarch Grove. She loves anything purple. No football for her. She likes books about moms and dads and animals. That smile comes out every time she surprises herself, like when she knows a word or a letter, or when she reads a page and fixes a mistake. It's like, did you see that? Did you see what I just did? It's fun to watch. Left represents the percentage of English learners who participated in reading recovery over the past 3 years, as well as the students who are enrolled this fall. The blue represents English-only students, while the green represents our English learners. Second language learners are eligible for reading recovery if they have sufficient English to understand the tasks of our assessment. You'll notice that that the percentage of English learners participating in reading recovery has increased by 6% since 2011-2012. Remember that the 2014-15 data is for the students we picked up our first round this year. Does this indicate a 10% increase in the percentage of English learners we will serve this year, or perhaps more students in this group need early support and are served in our first round? The graph on the right identifies the percentage of socioeconomically disadvantaged students who participated in reading recovery for the same time period. You'll also notice an increase in the percentage of students in this group who received reading recovery services. As we begin to review the data this evening, I'd like to take a moment to describe the 2 positive outcomes we expect in reading recovery. The first outcome is when a child receives sufficient lessons to be designated as discontinued from the intervention. A child whose series of lessons is discontinued makes significant progress, reaching grade level expectations in reading and writing. In addition, the child demonstrates independent problem-solving abilities that support continued achievement in the classroom without. Reading recovery helps to identify early those students who need long-term support and whose needs cannot be met by a short-term intervention. In general, students in our district who are recommended fall into 2 groups. Students with more intensive needs are referred back to their IEP team or their students who are assessed for special education services. A second group of students are those who made significant progress in reading recovery but not enough to reach grade level expectations. These students are well served in small group LLI intervention. Let's start our data discussion by reviewing the outcomes from last year. In 2013-2014, we were able to provide reading recovery intervention to 120 of our 526 first grade students, with 23% of our students participating. Each of our school sites has reading recovery support with staffing decisions based upon kindergarten literacy data. Our goal is to reach full implementation, meaning that all students performing below grade level expectations have access to this educational opportunity. This is a picture of Diego, one of the students I worked with last year who discontinued his series of lessons. He still stops by to say hello and share books with me. His second grade teacher and I are working together to monitor his overall progress to ensure he does not lose the ground he gained last year. Are you reading, Diego? And he's doing great. The next slide provides more information on the students we served in 2013-2014. This data from submit their data to the Ohio database. That happens all across the country. That's that national database. The blue line represents San Luis Coastal students who started in reading recovery in the fall. You'll see that our students' text levels are lower than the national random sample group in the fall. By the time our students exited from the program, around February, it shows that they have made significant progress. The continued climb from exit to year end demonstrates that the students continued to make progress and came close to the achievement levels of the national group. This would suggest that reading recovery is successfully closing the achievement gap for our most fragile first grade readers and that students are continuing to achieve after completion of the intervention. This final graph for 2013-14 shows how our students who discontinued performed on the benchmark assessment, our district common assessment for text reading. Close to 80% of our students, including our socioeconomically disadvantaged and our English learners, met proficiency on this assessment. Before we review the longitudinal data, we need to identify the students for this study. For the purposes of this review, we identified those students who discontinued reading recovery and who are still attending our schools. When we consider grade level proficiency, it's based on the students' outcomes on two of our district adopted common assessments, the benchmark assessment, which is used in grades K through third grade, and then also the scholastic reading inventory, which is a third. This graph represents students who are now in third grade, who discontinued reading recovery in first grade. As you can see, there was an increase in the proficiency of not only all discontinued students, but also our targeted groups as measured by the district common assessments. This is evidence that our discontinued students continue to make gains in proficiency through second grade. As we looked at the data over 3 years, we noted a decline in the percentage of students from the cohort group who demonstrated proficiency at the end of third grade. This caused us concern. When we broke down the data into our targeted groups, we found a similar pattern. We wondered if this change in the data was a factor of reading recovery or the instructional demands of third grade, and we began to wonder why. This led us to dig deeper to see how our reading recovery cohort group compared to all third graders. This slide, this final slide, compares the proficiency percentages of the reading cohort group and the reading, of the reading recovery cohort group and the reading recovery target groups to all third graders. The data shows that 6% fewer reading recovery students demonstrated proficiency compared to the total group of third graders. However, SED students who participated in reading recovery had a 16% higher proficiency rate than the total SED group for third grades. Review of the data led us to reflect upon the strengths of reading recovery as well as its role in our early literacy program. We know it makes a difference for our most struggling readers and writers. We also know that reading recovery can't do it alone. As we consider our next steps, we would offer the following recommendations to strengthen our early literacy instructional model to meet the needs of all of our students. First, we must ensure that our most effective teachers are working with our hardest to teach, hardest to reach students. We know that each year of teaching and learning in reading recovery only increases teacher effectiveness. Second, we must continue to support our teachers in developing effective classroom practices. Our instructional coaches will continue to collaborate with teachers as they fine-tune their skills in the reading and writing workshop models. Third, we need to focus greater attention on why we're seeing a decline in the reading proficiency of our third grade English learners. We know that as readers are challenged by more complex texts, there are greater demands placed on the students. Our English learners have the added challenge of the acquisition of a second language at the same time they're learning to read and write. Therefore, we must work to provide the strongest language development opportunities in our classrooms for these students during the school year as well as extended into the summer. The reading, writing, and language development all have to progress together side by side. Fourth, our continued focus on the use of meaningful reading or writing are identified and provided the appropriate level of support early in their school careers to close the achievement gap by the end of third grade. Finally, we need to work towards a system of monitoring the ongoing progress of our K-3 students, and if their progress begins to slip, we want to make sure and provide additional support for them. Thank you so much for your time this evening. I hope it has informed you about the long-term outcomes of reading recovery and its role within our early literacy program. Are there any questions?
Mr. Unger.
Well, first of all, I just want to say this is so exciting, and I know Mr. Millar and possibly Mrs. Roger and I remember the controversy over reading recovery back in the 90s. And even when Mr. Millar and I got on the board in 2000, there was a lot of pressure, I think, to discontinue the program. And we stayed the course, although we made modifications to it based on the financial difficulties we had in the early part of the century. This is a phenomenal program, and it really does great things for kids. And I just want to thank you guys. I was curious. You mentioned the decline in third grade of reading proficiency, especially in our EL students. Mm-hmm. Do you see that at Pacheco as well?
We didn't look. We did not look at it from each school at each school site.
Yeah. Okay, Dr. Eisendrath Rogers, and then Mr. Millar.
That was actually going to be one of my questions as well. For the English learners at Pacheco, we're not offering a version of reading recovery.
For the students at Pacheco,
recovery results 2013 to 14 that show how we start below the national average. Mm-hmm. Do you have a theory about why that is? And will it? Okay, I'll let you hear your theory first.
Yeah, I think it makes sense that we start below the national average because that's a random sample of all students. So if you think of that national group, that's going to be students who would never be in reading recovery, or it could be students who might be in reading recovery. So I think the fact that we start a little bit below, because our data is just our reading recovery kids. Does that make sense?
Sort of. Let me test this on you. Maybe this is part of it too. So do you think with our transitional kindergarten programs now and some of our preschool programs, this will help? Will we be able to do that earlier identification you were talking about?
I think it absolutely is helping. I mean, we know just by going in and seeing what's happening for our preschoolers and our TK kids, simply for our TK kids, for getting one extra year of developmentally appropriate instruction is going to make a difference.
Excellent.
There's no question.
And one other thing that I think is making a big difference as well, we haven't collected any hard data on it, but talking with the reading recovery teachers, our students who are coming into reading recovery this year after a year of writer's workshop, mm-hmm.
are coming in with much stronger skills. It's we have kids who are already coming in writing, already have a much stronger sense of phonemic awareness, which is going to only serve them well. So
fantastic. Thank you.
Mr. Millar and then Mrs. Sheffer. Mr. Buckman, did you have your light on? Okay.
We're all lit up.
All right. Isn't it lighted? But anyway, the meaning, I guess we're, I don't know, I got a little confused over that this particular graph.
If I understand your question, meaning does this correlate with the increased numbers of English learners and students living in poverty over the last 3 years?
Yes.
We would have to go back to make that direct correlation, but I think we do know we have seen these numbers rise.
Right.
But I also want to point out again what Mary said. I've looked over this data so many times, I can almost talk to it at this point. But when you look at the 14-15 for both EL and SCD, this is based on the first round of students in already. So, and how we choose students for reading recovery, we start with the kids who are okay. most
All
in
right.
need.
Mm-hmm.
And so that will change for 14-15.
I got you. That helps. Thank you.
From
Thank
a strictly demographic standpoint, our EL numbers haven't risen significantly, so it wouldn't explain that, but our SED numbers certainly have, and that might be a partial explanation there.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Millar. Thank you, Mr. Robinette. Mrs. Sheffer, then Mr. Buckman, and then Mrs. Roger.
I wanted to thank you for the longitudinal data. I find that very useful. It's really good to get information that is over time. It makes much more sense, and it strengthens the context and what we're looking at. So I appreciate that very much. To follow up on what Ms. Rogers said, I will find it interesting to see if some of the reverse is true, that because of the PK, obviously the classroom setting and those kinds of things. So that'll be interesting to follow up as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Sheffer. Mrs. Roger.
Thank you. Mrs. Erm, you know to me you are a mini god. And I so value the work that you do,
Thank
truly.
You. Thank you for letting me do the work I do. I feel blessed every day.
We're a mutual admiration society.
Yeah.
Okay, but I did wonder, you made reference to long-term support
mm-hmm.
for students, and I wrote what would constitute long-term support. What would that look like?
When you're talking about the long-term support for students who are recommended?
Yes.
Yeah. So that for some students, that would be special education. So a student would be recommended, either they already have an IEP and their IEP team would then continue to support them, or they could be, if they go through reading recovery and have made minimal progress, they would be a student who would be recommended for assessment for possible identification for special education. And then for the other students, looking at LLI as a possible intervention, hopefully not a long term, but just to give kids who need a little more time to get that system in place, to give them that continued seamless support. And what's beautiful about reading recovery and LLI is they both run from the same they're both the same foundation and the same theoretical foundation, so kids are getting the same message.
So LLI is capturing the students that are above the reading recovery threshold.
Well, in kindergarten, we're identifying, because we have LLI in kindergarten, and then we also, in the fall, we identified our students who we picked up for reading recovery. There are other students out there that are struggling, and the goal is for those kids to get into a small group intervention. And again, they go into LLI. And sometimes those kids who start LLI in the fall, that's all they need. Others then come into reading recovery.
So LLI is three or four mm-hmm. with one instructor.
Correct.
And reading recovery is one-on-one.
Correct.
And reading recovery is 24 weeks?
It's 12 to 20 weeks, and it depends on how much time the students need. Some students in 13 weeks, 12 weeks, they're ready to be discontinued. But we go a full 20 weeks. That's the full amount of time that students would be in the program.
And how long do we go with LLI?
With our LLI, those groupings should be fluid, but I know at all of our schools, it's like in our kindergarten and first grade, it's pretty much aligned with our kindergarten, our reading recovery timeline.
Okay.
So same time we're making transitions in reading recovery, we're looking at our LLI groups.
But if a student was continuing to benefit from LLI, could they not matriculate out of it and continue through that whole first grade year?
In LLI?
Yeah.
If they're being successful and they're making growth and they've reached proficiency by the middle of the year, then we would say yes, they're done. But by middle of the year, if they haven't met proficiency, we don't want to miss the opportunity to bring in reading recovery if they need it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Mrs. Roger. Mr. Buckman.
So continuing on the pre-K.
I don't know that we would identify kids for reading recovery in pre-K because the reason we don't start students in reading recovery until first grade is we want them to have an opportunity to come into school. They're all coming from different preschool and different kinds of school experiences. We want them to have a chance to let good, solid classroom instruction be what they need. So I think we need to have some time for them to kind of settle into the school system. So.
Well, thank you very much. I learned quite a bit about reading recovery, and I thought I knew quite a bit, but now I know even more, and I appreciate that, and I appreciate the explanations that you've given.
Thank you.
And I appreciate my board members for asking every question that I could possibly think of on this.
Great.
Is there any public comment on this? Okay. Seeing none, we'll move on. We are now at item 9.02, construction planning process. And I see Mr. Pinkerton handing things out. The floor is yours, Mr. Pinkerton.
Yes, so Kim, can we leave it on this really quick? Before we throw the PowerPoint up, sorry. So I just want to point out to the board, the goal of this is kind of to help bring the board up to speed with construction planning processes, where we're at, the potential of the passage of Measure D, and kind of, I'm going to explain it to you. That's the problem with giving it to you early. But this first one, again, is kind of just the initial phases of construction planning processes. And then the second presentation, Anthony Palazzo, who is the Director of Facilities Maintenance Operation, will be coming back to the board to get much more in-depth about the construction aspect of it. So going through design build and lease-leaseback and why and selecting vendors and just a greater detail of those. But for me today is kind of just the beginning aspect of the construction planning process. Specifically tonight, I'm looking for the board's approval to go out and put out an RFQ for architects so that we can pull together a pool of architects, that we can gather a pool of architects that will help us because, with the projects, with the scope of what we're looking at, we're probably going to need multiple firms to help us get the work done. So, Kim, we can go ahead and start with the PowerPoint presentation. And so, again, this first phase is a construction planning process. First step in that really is, as I begin to talk about, is pulling together a group of architects that can really help us. We can go to the first slide. Why don't you go ahead and, Mandy, put the little, you can just go all the way through. She put the little indents. So, again, selecting architects, I would just do all of them if we can. The goal with architects, I would say a couple of critical things that we want to ensure in selecting architects to help us move forward, critical component as we interview. The second one is, and from my own experience in going through bond measure and renovation, is really that they have to be available to us. I mean, this is a very important process that you enter into when you begin construction and sites, and there's lots of issues that happen throughout the process. So you want to make sure that you have an architect firm that is going to be available to the district throughout that process. So that could be a local firm, you know, that normally is a good thing, but we'll be going out and putting this out on the line, you know, for everybody to have their opportunity to fulfill and put the RFQ out and hopefully share with us how they can be available and be, you know, able to work with our stakeholders closely throughout those processes. And so those are kind of some key aspects of the architects. Again, the main thing for us is to ensure that we have a group of architects that we feel are going to be a great fit for our sites, working with our staff and moving forward. And kind of in terms of getting that pool of architects, I would say as the board approves projects, as we move forward, we would then match the architect with the project and, you know, what's going to be the best fit. So that's kind of this first phase, and we want to begin that now to get those architects in line so that should Measure D pass, we're able to begin, because we know it's an 18-month process to do this, to meet with staff, to go visit other school sites, to see other designs, get ideas, talk to staff, come back with site facility committees but we will hopefully be able to put that out tomorrow should the board approve that after we're done with this today. So next slide. Kind of the next key component after selecting architects is really site facility committees. And can we go all the way through? And so site facility committees are made up of teachers, classified staff, parents, community, site administration, district representatives, and should say students, specifically at our two high schools. We should have students on those committees. This group is basically kind of the oversight group of the, you know, architects working with staff, coming up with ideas, coming up with designs, and then this group is kind of the, again, like I said, the oversight aspect of that. So the people that are on these site facility committees really need to be people that do not have a singular interest, people that can really look at the big picture. So let's say Morro Bay High School, $60 million to spend. The board has priorities that you've set out. We want to make sure we get the best bang for our buck, right, in terms of our resources, and we get as much done as possible. And so in looking at that continuum of projects and continuum of things that we want to get done at those schools, this site committee helps us oversee that. Okay, it helps us to make sure that we're not building, a $20 million theater and using up all the funds for it, or a $20 million pool or something else like that, and then not having enough money for their priorities. So that's, you know, it's a key group. They also are, the architects will go to sites and meet with all the science teachers. They'll meet with the performing arts teachers. They'll meet with the foreign language teachers. They'll meet with all the staff. They'll meet with parents. They'll meet with kids and get ideas. Getting the most bang for our buck, getting as much done as possible.
Jim, can I ask a quick
question?
So at the bottom of this slide, it says the committee will make recommendations for board approval at each phase. I assume that the committee is going to make recommendations to Dr. Prater, and then he's going to bring those recommendations forward.
Yes.
Okay.
So yeah, that is a step in the process, as well as there will be district representatives as well. I envision myself, Mr. Plaza, being part of those site committees, helping them along with the process and ensuring that we're having that oversight view, making sure that we're staying within the board's realm of what the board has established and priorities, those types of things. Mr. Buckman.
I'm actually just holding my place in queue until the end of the presentation.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
And again, so those site facility committees, after working with the architect, working with site staff, talking to everyone, kind of making those recommendations come through the superintendent, come to the board for approval. So next group, or next aspect, is really some key things that I wanted to just kind of talk about today and so that we understand, some of the key components of phasing. So specifically at our two comprehensive high schools, some of this construction will be happening while school's going on. And so we can't do every project all at one time within 1 year. These are things that will have to be phased in over 5 to 7 years in terms of projects. at Slo High, I envision us having to probably bring in modular classrooms because it's the cash flow, is the money. So I've kind of put an example for you. I'll show you an example of the type of the type of document that we would want to put together, both from a financial standpoint. It's going to be really critical for us, I would say, over this process to make sure that we're as transparent with the public as possible, and to have this online, to be bringing this on a continual basis to the board to kind of show you where we're at, how we're progressing with the use of the funds, and kind of the project link. So this was just kind of a type of example, as well as to show you how in-depth it is. You know, it's critical that we put together a financial plan that not only works with John Isom in terms of our bond sales and ensuring that we have the funds available to do these projects and phasing those out. It's the phasing of the actual projects themselves throughout the time. It's also the financial planning aspect of having somebody come in and really tying every bond dollar to every project throughout the process. So that we have that really transparent process of where the money's being spent, how it's being spent. It's something that's online that comes to the board on a constant, you know, monthly basis type of thing. Will be huge for our Citizen Oversight Committee, which I'll talk at the end about, just so that we're, again, really transparent, really showing where the tax dollars are being used. So that is a key component, I would say, of that phasing aspect, again, of developing the timelines, assigning projects, and determining what that cash flow model is going to look like. So the next one is project implement. And really the key thing that I wanted to kind of talk about here is really this bottom piece, in that realize throughout the phasing, throughout the site facility teams, throughout the discussions that are happening, this is a push-pull that's going on. Okay, because our goal, again, I mean, I feel like it should be our goal. Hopefully the board agrees with that. We want to get as much done with the resources that the public is going to entrust us with as possible, right? We want to get the most bang for our dollar and have our schools look great using these funds. And so that is a push-pull. I mean, there are times when, are we going to do stucco? Are we going to do block? Are we, you know, there's all kinds of questions and construction types that will happen, and that's all part of that budgetary process. As again, we phase out, we look at what the project costs, we look at what we want to get accomplished. It's critical in those timelines that you don't put the top priority project that you want to get done later on, because you want to ensure that you have the funds available to make sure that those projects get done. And so it's having that oversight of the big picture while still on a day-to-day basis, getting projects implemented, I think, is really important. It's a constant, again, cycle of rectifying budget and scope issues throughout the projects as they're being implemented, and again, making sure that we're focused on the board priorities that have been established. So that's, and again, Anthony's going to get way more in depth into that implementation phase. Ms. Roger.
Well, I just was wondering, when you're talking about going out for RFQs to mm-hmm. various architectural firms, a different architectural firm, I mean, it
depends on the project, depends on the scope of what's happening and the types of projects going on. I would envision probably one architect working with Slo High School.
Okay.
One architect working with Morro Bay High School.
The other way seemed very,
you know,
potential for
that said, there will be projects like maybe the pool. There may be a specific group or architect or contractor that builds pools. And so that may be outside the scope of the other projects that are going on. So when we talked about earlier at the very beginning, kind of assigning projects to architects based on kind of those tie-in, I think that's part of it. I think, and Anthony can elaborate more on that with the next presentation as well, kind of how that would actually unfold.
One other question. When you talked about casting a wide net when looking for design services, you also spoke about needing the architect to have a representative that's available to us.
Yes.
And so how wide would you envision the net to be?
Any you know, we idea? Put it out on the public RFQ site, so it's pretty much open publicly to
So we might get somebody from Gilroy?
We could, and so one of the questions I would have for them is, how are you going to be available to us? You know, that would be one of the key things that I would want to, you know, before I would want them to be part of a big project or part of it is how are they going to make themselves available to the district in that interview? That'll be a major component.
I'm wondering if we might not benefit from keeping it a bit more local, just in terms of, you know, for proximity issues.
And I think definitely being local would definitely be advantageous for a firm that is applying.
Thank you.
Mr. Buckman, did you want to ask your question now?
Yeah, that would be great. Okay. Thanks. In the past, the bond measure that you were involved with in Arroyo Grande, did you do this multiple architect approach?
Well, it was only one school site, though.
Okay.
So I think that's a little different in that aspect. I mean, we're talking about, you know, two comprehensive high schools, potentially every single one of our sites needing an architect firm. So I guess maybe in the interview process, somebody will be able to prove that they can do the whole, I don't know, you know, but that's a lot of work. A lot of work.
From where I'm sitting, it feels like a new process, and it may not be, but I don't think I've heard of this before, and I'm kind of excited about it.
Yeah. We actually talked about, too, and Anthony, Mr. Palazzo, talked about even before it all starts, getting that pool of architects together to really look at model classrooms and work together on ideas and you know, trying to be as innovative as possible, I think, as we move forward. So we'll see how it goes.
It seems exciting. It seems in the past, districts relied on one architect. Sometimes the windows went in backwards, but
yeah,
so
like
this is exciting.
Pioneer High School.
Pioneer High School.
Mr. Unger.
Yeah, I really appreciated the detail of the RFQ that you sent us. I thought it was really fascinating. Secondly, just a concern I have is making sure that when we look also at the architects, we look at, I don't know, if independent oversight, some kind of oversight. I'm imagining that Anthony is going to be taking a huge role in this, but that could be his full-time job, and obviously he's got other responsibilities in the district too. I would just want to make sure that our interests and the public interests are protected.
Sure.
The more complicated it gets. Okay.
Yeah, I totally agree, and so I think that's part of that next presentation for Anthony to come back to you and kind of talk about not just these things, but how this can be implemented or the variety of methods that something like this can be implemented. And so I would want him to kind of share that. We are fortunate that we have Mr. Plaza on board in terms of having that experience and this having done this for a living, as well as I feel really good about Steve Stewart, who's our other a ton of construction experience. So now that said, there will be the need to bring in project managers and things like that. So I would like Anthony to kind of spell that out for the board, of kind of how that looks and what it looks like. You know, us doing it ourselves versus a construction management company, the pros and cons, those types of things. Okay? So the last one is just kind of an overall kind of view, roles and responsibilities, kind of the key groups that we talked about. So the first one for the board, it's, you know, as I see it, and again, add on, tell me if I'm on the right path or not, but really the board is the oversight of the expenditure of bond funds, making sure that oversight is in place. So those are the key aspects, I would say, and you've already established priorities, so now it's to make sure that those are that those are completed, and I see this as again we'll have to talk to the board after Anthony's presentation about how you would like this done. Do you want a monthly report instead of, you know, bond measures, you know, those types of construction things happening every single board meeting? Are there specific times? Those are things for us to think about. As far as the superintendent and Dr. Prater's team, I think it's our job to get, again, like I said, to get the most bang for our buck. We want to make sure that this is a success. And we want to make sure that we specifically communicate everything that's going on and make this as transparent as possible for the public. Because in the future, there's no doubt, 20 years from now, you know, we want people to think back and say, man, Measure D, look at what it accomplished, look how great it was, look at how the district spent the funds. I mean, to me, that's what I want to have happen, and I want people to think that way about this measure should it pass. Site Facility Committee, as I said, it's really critical that that group has a whole view, that they're not one-sided in one specific area, that they really can take everything in, and that they really take in all the staff consideration in terms of looking at projects. And because there will come a point when there'll be things, it'll be one or the other. You know, as the bond funds are expended, we get down to kind of the final projects, I would say, at each site. And so it'll be really critical for that group to, you know, to make sure that we're doing what's in the best interest of our students and our staff. Basically, the Citizens Oversight Committee, their role is to ensure that bond funds are spent appropriately based on the resolution that was put in front of the voters, that we are expending those funds the way that we said we would on the ballot. And that's what they do. And so that group will need to get put together when the board hopefully is able to accept the election results. We will put together a process for you to develop and select the Citizens Oversight Committee, and that'll be something we'll talk more about, I would say, in the future. But I wanted to share the AR with you because it kind of talks about, and again, that's just Ed Code specifically, who has to be on those committees and how that's made up.
Is it a 501?
So those are kind of the key.
I know.
Yes.
Well, I was, notwithstanding your admonition, I was reading ahead.
That's okay.
At the Citizens Oversight Committee. And since we really are doing a bond issue to service schools in one city, one large community, Morro Bay, and Avila and other parts of Los Osos, thank you. It seems to me that we're going to have a fairly expanded committee.
Yes.
Because we're going to have to represent those individual interests for the community. And then Mr. Unger asked a not a tongue-in-cheek question, but how do we identify a bona fide taxpayers organization?
And that'll be something that I'm going to have our financial advisor, Mr. Isom, help us with.
All right.
So I didn't want to get too ahead of that whole selection process, those types of things. I don't want to get a little ahead of the gun in terms of, you know, the bond measure being passed, this process. And so I will just end with hopefully the board at this point, if you have any other questions, to answer them, and looking for approval to begin that RFQ process tomorrow if possible.
Before we do that, Mr. Pinkerton, we're going to open it up for public
Perfect.
Comment. Is there anyone who wishes to speak to this item? Please come forward right there and identify yourself. And
hello, my name is Rena. I'm a parent and also a new San Luis Coastal employee. So I just first wanted to thank you for seeing the need for this for the schools. And I apologize if this is slightly off topic, but I'm just hoping that when the design teams look at increasing energy efficiency, I'm not sure how much of a renovation is going to happen, but if at all possible, if passive solar design can be incorporated, that would be amazing. I've been at many school sites where the opposite of passive solar is seen, where the large windows are on the wrong side and the solid wall is on the wrong side, and it's, I know only so much can be done in renovations, but passive solar is can be really powerful in terms of energy efficiency. And then my other comment was the other factors, and I do have an interest in becoming part of, obviously, the committee when that happens, if it passes, if Measure D passes. But just general comments, some other things that I feel are important are a unique character, just as an important part of being a place of learning. And again, just thank you for seeing the importance of just and the need for this.
And if I could add, I spoke to Rena and her son at Farmer's Market yesterday, and he reminded me of the importance of having student input in the design phase. And I'm glad that you brought that up too. So thank you, Ryan.
So we just need to give you our approval for a RFQ.
To move forward.
So I think, does this have to be done in the form of a motion? It does. Okay, so I'll entertain a motion.
I move approval of the recommendation to go forward with an RFQ for an architect for possible for renovations, assuming that Measure D passes.
Well, I have a second over here. So I have a motion by Mr. Unger, a second by Mrs. Sheffer. Is there any further discussion?
Yeah, Chris, I'm sitting all the way over here, so I don't know if you're saying architect or architects.
RFQ for the for architects, I would say. And then just adding on, I just want to also think it's probably premature, but as we're looking at these things, I think it would be important for us to look at LEED standards as well. I don't know what the cost would be on things like that, given our $60 million, but there's a lot going on, as you reminded us. Thank you.
Sure.
Linda? And I'm going to read these items off, and if you wish one pulled, we'll do that. Okay, item 10.01, which is the approval of certificated and classified personnel items. Item 10.02, approval to teach a class outside of credentialed authorization. Item 10.03, disposition of surplus property. Item 10.04, acceptance of donations. Item 10.05, approval of furniture and equipment request. 10.06, approval of purchase orders. 10.07, approval of warrants and payroll. 10.08, approval of quarterly report on uniform complaint filings, the Williams settlement. And item 10.09, authorization for records destruction. Okay.
I'll move approval of items 10.01 through 10.09.
Okay, Mr. Millar moved to approve those items, and a second by Mrs. Sheffer. Any further discussion? Any public comment? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes 6-0 with one absence. We are now on the action on the consent agenda items. Is there any items for the consent? Wait a minute. I'm sorry. That's not what I meant. Advanced agenda is what I meant to say. Thank you. Are there any items for the advanced agenda?
No, I was attending the Special Ed Coalition meeting in Washington, D.C., where we spoke to legislators legislators and their staff about special education funding, primarily and asking them to bring the funding level up to the promised 40%. Of course, we were told there's no money, but we wanted to do it anyway. I think one of the most important things, though, that we heard was that although there is a necessity for IDEA reauthorization, it's not going to happen before ESEA is reauthorized, and there's no chance ESEA is going to be reauthorized within a year. It possibly a year to 2 years, maybe. So we're looking at several years down the road for IDEA reauthorization and ESEA reauthorization. One of the more interesting things I did was I attended a hearing at the Department of Special Education, the Office of Special Education, because what happened, California was targeted as a state needing intervention for their special education versus a needs assistance. And needing intervention, although what that means hasn't been completely delineated yet, it sort of puts us in the penalty phase. What happened, though, was that the feds judged California's special education needing intervention based on the NAEP scores. The NAEP is a national exam. The NAEP specifically was not to be given to special education students because it can't have accommodations. So we have 702,000 special education students. Out of 702,000 students, 500 NAEP scores were used to determine whether California, D.C., somebody made the comment, well, you know, what's your beef? Everybody else took the test. And, of course, our response was, well, a bad test given to everybody doesn't make it a good test, right? I mean, you know, come on, give me a break, right? So that was really interesting. Then last week, I did attend the CSBA Board of Directors meeting. There was a discussion on Proposition 2, and the Board of Directors of CSBA voted to not take a position on Proposition 2. However, the Board of Directors agreed that we would strongly oppose the budget cap trailer bill. Remember that Prop 2 is the initiative that will be going forward on the November ballot, and that's a constitutional issue. However, the trailer bill language that's attached to it is legislative language that could be brought forward for modification or repeal if Prop 2 passes. Prior to that, I and the executive board of CSBA did have an opportunity to actually meet with Governor Brown about a month ago, and we spent about an hour with the governor and expressed to him our extreme displeasure with the language. He listened attentively, and you know, we'll see what happens after the election when the legislature reconvenes. Just another couple of things. I attended something called the Unity Conference, which was a conference highlighting the academic needs of Latinos, African American, and Asian American students in the district, especially with their LCAP. Also, Moreno Valley is just really doing a lot of outreach, especially with their African American families. Now, they have 30% African American families in a district of 10,000 students, which, of course, we don't. And then the last thing I just thought was really cool is I got to go visit a place called Ocean Knoll Elementary School in Encinitas. And what they've done in Encinitas is each of the elementary schools has a school farm, but they have a school compost program where any trash, any food that hasn't been eaten is actually separated out into essentially compost bins at the site by the cafeteria. They say that they've lowered their campus waste by 80% and that they're reusing the compost in their school gardens. And I just thought that was really cool, and I had to share that. So thank you for indulging me.
Thank you, Mr. Unger. I just want to ask a favor of you and for the general public. There's two terms that are often used in education, or two acronyms, ESEA and IDEA. Could you tell us what those mean?
ESEA is the Elementary and Secondary School Act, I believe, which is better known as No Child Left Behind. And then IDEA is the Individuals for Disability Education Act, which are the federal regulations for special education.
And those sort of define the federal government's role
education. Correct. And the reason the federal government has a say in those things for our district, for example, is because we accept federal funds, and when we accept federal funds, we agree to live by their rules.
Thank you, Mr. Unger.
See list in the state of California. What I was going to say is I believe the work that Chris Dowler's done and this administrative staff is, I don't think that if we took our district by itself that we would be in that group. So I'm hoping if we can figure that out, I think that would be great. I attended C.L. Smith's math night, and probably over 100 parents and their children. It's phenomenal. The pizza was good. But to see that parents and the children engaged together trying to figure out this math and parents doing the old division with the bar and the having to carry numbers and the kids going, wait, you just take 10 apples and you take the core out of the app. I mean, it was really exciting. And then it was mentioned that I did attend the report card meeting, which was also very exciting. So
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Buckman. Anything more for school reports? Okay. So seeing that we're concluded with the reports by school board members, we are adjourned, and we will meet again October 21st at Los Osos Middle School. Thank you all for coming.